From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
If She Bends, She Breaks by John Gordon. Ben had felt strange ever since the snow started falling. He looked out of the classroom window and saw that it had come again, sweeping across like a curtain. That was exactly what it seemed to be, a curtain. The snow had come down like a blank sheet in his mind, and he could remember nothing beyond it. He could not even remember getting up this morning or walking to school. Yesterday was only a haze, and the last week did not exist. And now, at this moment, he did not know whether it was morning or afternoon. He began to get to his feet, but dizziness made him sit down. "I know it's been freezing hard," Miss Carter's voice from the front of the class seemed distant. He wanted to tell her he felt unwell, but just for the moment, he did not have the energy. She had her back to the stove, as usual, and the eyes behind her glasses stared like a frightened horse's, as they always did when she was in a passion. "It's been freezing hard," she repeated, "but the ice is still far too dangerous, and nobody is to go anywhere near it. Do you understand?" Tommy Drake, in the next desk to Ben, murmured something and grinned at somebody on Ben's other side, but he ignored Ben completely. "Tommy Drake," Miss Carter had missed nothing. "What did you say?"
"Nothing, miss."
"Then why are you grinning like a jackass? If there's a joke, we all want to hear it. On your feet." As Tommy pushed back his chair, Ben smiled at him weakly. But Tommy seemed to be in no mood for him and winked at somebody else, as though Ben himself was not there. "Well?" Miss Carter was waiting. Tommy stood in silence.
"Very well. If you are not going to share your thoughts with the rest of us, perhaps you will remind me of what I was saying a moment ago."
"About the ice, miss."
"And what about the ice?"
"That it's dangerous, miss."
Then Tommy, who did not lack courage, went on. "What I was saying was that you can always tell if it's safe."
"Oh, you can you?" Miss Carter pursed her lips and again waited.
"If she cracks, she bears," said Tommy. "If she bends, she breaks." It was a lesson they all knew in the flat Fenland, where everybody skated in winter. A solid cracking sound in the ice was better than a soft bending, but it meant nothing to Miss Carter.
"Stuff and nonsense," she cried.
"But everybody knows it's true." Tommy had justice on his side, and his round face was getting red.
"Old wives' tales." Miss Carter was not going to listen to reason. "Sit down." Ben saw that Tommy was going to argue, and the sudden urge to back him up made him forget his dizziness. He got to his feet.
"It's quite true, miss," he said. "I've tried it out."
She paid no attention to him. She glared at Tommy.
"Sit down."
Tommy obeyed, and Miss Carter pulled her cardigan tighter over her dumpy figure.
"Listen to me, all of you." Her voice was shrill. "I don't care what anybody says in the village. I won't have any of you go anywhere near that ice. Do you hear? Nobody."
She paused and then added softly, "You all know what can happen." She had succeeded in silencing the classroom, and as she turned away to her own desk, she muttered something to the front row, who began putting their books away. It was time for break. Ben was still standing. In her passion, she seemed not to have seen him.
"What's up with her?" he said, but Tommy was on his feet and heading towards the cloakroom with the rest. The dizziness came over Ben again. Could nobody see that he was unwell? Or was his illness something so terrible that everybody wanted to ignore it? The classroom had emptied, and Miss Carter was wiping her nose on a crumpled paper handkerchief. He would tell her how he felt, and perhaps she would get his sister to walk home with him. He watched her head swing towards him, and he opened his mouth to speak, but her glance swept over him, and she turned to follow the others. A movement outside one of the classroom's tall, narrow windows made him look out. One boy was already in the yard, and the snow was thick and inviting. Beyond the railings, there was the village, and through a gap in the houses, he could see the flat fence stretching away in a desert of whiteness. He knew it all. He had not lost his memory. The stuffiness of the classroom was to blame, and outside there was delicious coolness and space. Without bothering to follow the others to the cloakroom for his coat, he went out. There was still only the boy in the playground, a new kid kicking up snow. He was finding the soft patches, not already trodden, and as he plowed into them, he made the snow smoke around his ankles so that he almost seemed to lack feet. Ben went across him and said, "They let you out early, did they?" The new kid raised his head and looked at the others, who were now crowding out through the door. "I reckon," he said. "Me and all," said Ben. It wasn't strictly true, but he didn't mind bending the truth a bit, as he had been feeling ill, but not any more. "Where'd you come from?" he asked. "Over yonder?" The new kid nodded vaguely beyond the railings and then went back to kicking snow. "It's warm, ain't it?" he said, watching the powder drift around his knee. "When you get used to it." "What do your dad do?" "Horseman," said the kid, and that was enough to tell Ben where he lived and where his father worked. Only one farm for miles had working horses. Tommy's family, the Drakes, had always had horses and were rich enough to have them working alongside tractors as a kind of hobby. "You live along Pingle Bank, then?" said Ben. The horseman had a cottage there near the edge of the big drainage canal, the Pingle, that cut a straight deep channel across the flat fence. "That's right," said the kid, and looked up at the sky. "More of it coming." The clouds had thickened over the winter sun, and in the gray light snow had begun to fall again. The kid held his face up to it. "Best time of the year, winter. Brings you out into the open, don't it?" "Reckon," Ben agreed, "if them clouds was in summer, we should be getting soaked." "I hate getting wet." The kid's face was pale, and snow was resting on his eyelashes. "Me and all." They stood side by side and let the snow fall on them. The kid was quite right. It seemed warm. Then the snowball fight rolled right up to them, and charging through the middle of it came Tommy, pulling Ben's sister on her sled. Just like him to have taken over the sled, and Jenny and barged into the new kid as though he was nobody. Ben stooped, rammed snow into two hard fistfuls, and hurled them with all his force at Tommy's red face. He was usually a good shot, but he missed, and Tommy was yelling at Jenny as she labored to make snowballs and pile them on the sledge. "They ain't no good. Look, they're falling apart." Tommy crouched and swept them all back into the snow. Jenny had no height, but a lot of temper. She was on her feet, her face as red as his, and yanked her sledge away. "Bring that back," he yelled, but Ben was already charging at him. Tommy must have been off balance because it took no more than a touch to push him sideways and send him into the snow flat on his back. "You want to leave my sister alone?" Ben sat on his chest with his knees on Tommy's arms. "Tell her you're sorry." He and Tommy were the same size, both strong, and sometimes they banged their heads together just to see who would be the first to back off. But this time, without any effort or even bothering to answer him, Tommy sat up and spilled Ben off his chest as though he had no weight at all. And as he tilted back helplessly, Ben saw the new kid standing by watching. "Hi," he shouted. "Snowball fight. You're on my side." The kid looked pretty useful, pale but solid, and Ben needed help. "You done it wrong," the new kid said to Ben, and without hurrying, he stepped forward. The kid reached out to where Tommy was still sitting and put a hand over his face, spreading out pale, cold fingers across his mouth and eyes. He seemed merely to stroke him, but Tommy fell backwards. "You don't need no pressure," said the kid. "All you got to do is let them know you're there." "You got 'em." Ben had rolled away to let the kid tackle Tommy alone. "Show us your stuff." The kid seemed to be in no hurry, and Tommy lay where he was, one startled eye showing between the pallid fingers. Any second now and there would be a quick thrust of limbs, and Tommy would send the kid flying. It was stupid to wait for it. Ben started forward to stop the massacre. But then the kid looked up. The snow was still in his eyelashes, and a crust of it was at the corners of his mouth like ice. "Want me to do any more?" he asked. In the rest of the playground, shouts of snow fights echoed against the high windows and dark walls of the old school building, but in this corner the gray clouds seemed to hang lower, as if to deaden the kid's voice. "I asked you," he said. "You want to see me do some more?" Tommy stirred, gathering himself to push. In a moment, the boy would pay for being so careless, unless he had some trick and was pressing on a nerve. Ben wanted to see what would happen. He nodded. The kid did not look away from Ben, but his hand left Tommy's face, and Tommy did not get up. He simply lay there, with his eyes and mouth wide open. He looked scared. The kid, still crouching, began to stroke the snow. He curved his fingers and raked it, dusting the white powder into Tommy's hair, then over his brow and his eyes, and then the kid's hand, so pale it could not be seen in the snow, was over Tommy's lips, and snow was being thrust into the gaping mouth. The kid leant over him, and Tommy was terrified. He tried to shout, but more snow was driven into his mouth. He rolled over, thrashing helplessly. The kid paused as though waiting for instructions, but Ben, curious to see what Tommy would do, waited. It was then that the brittle little sound of a handbell reached them. It came from the porch where Miss Carter was calling them in, but suddenly the sound ceased, and even the shouting of the snow fights died. The whole playground had seen her drop the bell. She started forward, pushing her way through the crowds, and then, caught up in her anxiety, they came with her like black snowflakes on the wind. It was Tommy jerking and choking on the ground that drew them. It was no natural fooling in the snow. He was fighting to breathe, and the new kid stood over him, looking down. "Tommy, what have you done?" Miss Carter was stooping over him, crying out at the side of his mouth wide open and full of whiteness. "Oh my God!" Ben stared across her bent back at the new kid. He simply stood where he was, a sprinkle of white in the short crop of his black hair, and gazed back at him. "Who did this to you?" Miss Carter had thrust her fingers into the snow gape in Tommy's face and rolled him over so that he was coughing, gasping, and heaving all at once. "How did this happen?" But he could not answer, and she helped him to his feet and began walking with him. "Who saw this? Which of you did this?" She had snow on her fur-lined boots, and her gray hair was untidy. Her little red nose was sharp with the cold, and she pointed it round the ring that had gathered, sniffing out the guilty one. "You?" Her eyes were on Ben, but had passed by almost before he had shaken his head. "What about you?" The new kid was at the back of the crowd and did not even have to answer. Denials came from every side, and the chattering crowd followed her into school. Ben and the kid hung back and were alone in the porch when the door closed and shut them out. Neither had said a word, and Ben turned towards him. The kid stood quite still, gazing straight ahead, as though the door was the open page of a book and he was reading it. He wore a long black jacket, and a gray scarf was wound once around his neck and hung down his back. Ben noticed for the first time that the kid's black trousers were knee-length and were tucked into long, thick socks. They looked like riding breeches, and he thought the kid must help his father with the horses, but his boots were big and clumsy, not elegant like a horseman's. There was something gawky about him. He looked poor and old-fashioned. "You done all right," said Ben. "Tommy ain't bad in a fight." The kid turned towards him. There was still unmelted snow on his cheeks, and his eyelashes were tinged with white. His dark eyes were liquid, as though he was on the verge of crying. But that was false. They had no expression at all. "He ain't as good as he reckoned," said the kid, and left it at that. "What class you in?" Ben asked. "Same as you." "Didn't notice you. I were by the stove." "Miss Carter always keeps her bum to that. That's why I don't throw out no heat," said Ben, but the kid did not smile. He led the way inside. They had not been missed. Miss Carter was still fussing around Tommy. She had pulled the fire guard back from the stove so that he could go to the front of the class and sit close to it. But she was still angry. "I'm going to catch whoever did that to you, and when I do..." She pinched in her little mouth until it was lipless and her eyes needled around the room. Ben had taken his usual place at the back and suddenly realized the new kid had wandered off. He searched and found him. He was sitting at a desk no more than 2 paces from Miss Carter and Tommy. He had one arm over the desk lid and the other resting loosely on the back of his chair. He was quite untroubled. "Stand up, Tommy," Miss Carter ordered. "Now turn round and point out who did this terrible thing." Tommy, a hero now, was enjoying himself. He faced the class. Ben could see the pale curve of the new kid's cheek and guessed at the deep water look of the eyes that were turned on Tommy. "Tommy," said Miss Carter, and obediently Tommy looked round the room. He smirked at several people, but not at Ben. He ignored him as though angry with him for what had happened, yet not prepared to betray him. But there was a real risk he would get his revenge on the kid. Yet again his glance went by as though the boy's desk was empty, and he said, "Nobody done it. I just fell over, that's all." The girl next to Ben whispered to her friend, "Maybe he had a fit. That looked like it when his mouth all white, like he was foaming." "Be quiet," Miss Carter had lost her patience. "Sit down," she ordered Tommy, and for the rest of the afternoon she was savage, even with him. From time to time Ben looked towards the new kid, but he kept his head bowed over his work, and Ben saw no more than the black bristles of his cropped hair. Nobody attempted to speak to him because whenever anybody moved, Miss Carter snapped. The last half hour dragged, but then, with a rattle of pencils and a banging of desk lids, the afternoon ended. The new kid wasted no time. He was out of the door ahead of everybody else, and Ben did not catch him until he was halfway across the playground. "Where are you going?" he asked. "The Pingle." "We ain't supposed to, because of the ice." "I live there." Then Ben remembered the horseman's cottage on the bank, but he said, "Ain't you going to hang around here a bit? We got some good slides in the yard." "Ice is better." The others charging out at the door prevented Ben saying more. Jenny, with her sledge, was being chased by Tommy. He was himself again and was telling her, "Your sledge will go great on the Pingle." "I don't want to go," she said. A bigger girl butted in. "You heard what Miss Carter said, Tommy Drake. Ain't you got no sense?" Tommy paid no attention. "Come on, Jenny. I ain't got time to go home and fetch me skates, or else I would. I'll bring 'em tomorrow and you can have a go, promise." She was tempted, but she said, "I don't want to go there. And you know why." "I won't take a step on it unless it's rock hard," said Tommy. "I ain't going," said Jenny. At the school gate, the kid moved his feet impatiently on the step. It had been cleared of snow and the metal studs on the boots rattled. Tommy had also lost his patience. "If she cracks, she bears. If she bends, she breaks. Everybody knows that's true, no matter what old Carter says. And I won't budge away from the bank unless it's safe." "No," said Jenny. Suddenly the kid kicked at the steps and made sparks fly from the sole of his boot, and Tommy looked up. The wind dived over the school roof in a howl and a plunge of snow, and the kid's voice merged with it as he yelled, "Come on!" He and Ben ran together, and Tommy grabbed at the sledge and made for the gate. Several others came with him. Ben and the boy kept ahead of the rest as they rounded the corner into the lane. Traffic had failed to churn up the snow, and had packed it hard, almost icy, so it would have been as good as anywhere for Jenny's sledge. But Ben ran with the boy between hedges, humped and white, and the others followed. They left the road just before it climbed to the bridge across the Pingle, and they stood at the top of the bank, looking down. They were the first to come here, the grass blade slowly arching as the snow had added petal after petal through the day, supported an unbroken roof just clear of the ground. Below them, the straight, wide channel stretched away to left and right through the flat, white land. The water had become a frozen road, and the wind had swept it almost clear, piling the snow in an endless, smooth drift on the far side. Tommy had come up alongside them. "You could go for miles," he shouted, but Jenny hung back. "I don't like it." The air was gray and cold, and it almost smothered her small voice. "I want to go home." It ain't dark yet. His voice yelped as though it came from the lonely seagull that angled up on a frozen gust far out over the white plain. He began to move forward. Let's get down there.
She doesn't want to go.
Ben was close to him, but Tommy paid no heed. Nobody's going down that bank, Tommy. Ben stepped forward, blocking his way. Nobody.
Tommy came straight on. His eyes met Ben's, but their expression did not change. His whole attention was focused on the ice below, and his gaze seemed to go through Ben as though he was not there. In a sudden, cold anger, Ben lowered his head and lunged with both arms. He thrust at Tommy's chest with all his force. His fingers touched, but in the instant of touching, they lost their grip. He thrust with all his power, but it was air alone that slid along his arms and fingers, and Tommy was past and threw him plunging down the bank. The kid, watching him, said, "You still don't do it right." Tommy had taken Jenny's sledge with him, and at the ice edge, he turned and shouted to them up the bank, "Come on, all of you!"
"No," Ben stood in front of them. "Don't go."
He opened his arms, but they came in a group straight for him.
"Stop!"
They did not answer. Their eyes did not look directly at him. They pushed into him like a crush of cattle, pretending he was not there. He clutched at one after another, but the strange weakness he had felt earlier made him too flimsy to stop anything, and they were beyond him and going down to join Tommy.
"I got to teach you a few things," said the kid.
"I don't feel too good," said Ben. "I think I ought to go home." The boy gazed at him for a moment with eyes that again seemed to be rimmed with frost, and shook his head.
"There's them down there to see to," he said.
Slowly Ben nodded. He had to think of Jenny. They went down together and found Tommy still on the bank. Frozen reeds stood up through the ice, and there was a seepage of water at the edge that made them all hesitate, all except the new kid. He put one foot on it, testing. "If she cracks, she bears," he said. Ben watched. The boy had plenty of courage. He was leaning forward now, putting all his weight on the ice. "She cracks," he said, but Ben had heard nothing.
"No," he called out, "she bends."
He was too late. The boy had stepped out onto the ice. Then Ben heard the crack under his boots, and the echo of it ringing from bank to bank and away along the endless ice in thin winter music. The boy moved out until he was a figure in black in the middle of the channel. "She bears," he called out. And Ben, who knew he could never stop the others now, stepped out to be with him. There was no crack this time, but the ice held. He could feel the gentle pulse of it as he walked towards the middle. There was something almost like a smile on the new kid's face. "Both of us done it," he said, and Ben nodded. On the bank there was a squabble. The big girl protecting Jenny was trying to pull the sledge rope from Tommy.
"Let her have her sledge," she said. "You didn't ought to have brung her here."
"It's safe enough. I don't care whether it's safe or not.
You didn't ought to have brung her. Not Jenny, of all people."
"Why all the fuss about Jenny?" said Ben to the kid. "I don't know what they're going on about."
"Don't you?"
The kid's eyes, darkening as the day dwindled, rested on him. Far away along the length of the frozen channel, snow and sky and darkness joined.
"Why don't they come out here?" said Ben.
"They can see us."
"We can go and fetch him," said the kid.
"How?"
"Get hold of that sledge. They'll follow."
Ben hesitated. Perhaps he was too weak to do even that.
The kid saw his doubt and said, "You've pulled a sledge before, ain't you?"
Ben nodded.
"Well, all you got to do is remember what it feels like, that's all."
Ben had to rely on him. Everything he had tried himself had gone wrong. He walked across to where Tommy was still arguing.
"See what you done to her," the girl was saying. She had her arm around Jenny's shoulder, and Jenny was crying, snuffling into her gloves. "Ain't you got no feelings, Tommy Drake?"
"Well, just because it happened once," said Tommy, "that ain't to say it's going to happen again."
"Wasn't just once," the girl thrust her head forward, accusing him. "There was another time." She lifted her arm from Jenny's shoulder and pointed up the bank behind her. "There was a boy lived up there along Pingle Bank. He came down here and went through the ice one winter time, and they never found him till it thawed."
"That were a long time ago," said Tommy. "Years before any of us was born."
"You ought to know about that if anybody do, Tommy Drake. That boy's father worked on your farm, everybody know about that, even if it was all them years ago. His father were a horseman and lived along the bank. Hey, Ben was close to Tommy, just like the new kid. But even that did not make Tommy turn his way. Ben reached for the sledge rope and jerked it. He felt the rope in his fingers just before it slipped through and fell. But he had tugged it from Tommy's grasp and the sledge ran out onto the ice. Come on, Tommy, he said. Come with me and the new kid. The girl was watching the sledge and accusing Tommy. What did you want to do that for? I didn't, he said. I did it, said Ben, but nobody looked towards him. The girl was furious with Tommy. Just look what you've done. Now you'll have to leave it. Tommy had put one foot on the ice, testing it. I ain't fit, he said. I reckon it'll hold. Of course it will, Ben encouraged him. We're both out here, ain't we? He paused and looked over his shoulder to make sure, but the kid was still there watching. Two of us, me and him. Tommy had both feet on the ice, had taken another step. See, he called to the others on the bank. Nothing to it. Don't you make a parade out there by yourself any longer, Tommy Drake. The girl pulled Jenny's face tighter into her shoulder and made an effort to muffle Jenny's ears. She leaned forward as far as she could, keeping her voice low so that Jenny should not hear. Can't you see what you're doing to her? This was just the place where Ben went through the ice last winter. Tommy, stamping to make the ice ring beneath him, kept his back to her. If she cracks, he said, she bears. If she bends, she breaks. Can't you hear? Said the girl. This is just the place where Ben were drowned. The snow came in a sudden flurry, putting a streaked curtain between Ben and the rest of them. It was then that he remembered. He remembered everything. The kid had come up to stand beside him, and they stood together and watched. The ice under Tommy sagged, as they knew it would. They heard the soft rending as it split, and they saw its broken edge rear up. They heard the yell and the slither and remembered the cold gulp of the black water that, with years between, had swallowed each of them, but now with somebody else who slid under. Then Jenny's screams reached Ben through the wind that was pushing down the channel as the night came on. She should be at home, not out here watching this. He stooped to the sledge and pushed. On the bank they saw nothing but a tight spiral of snow whipped up from the ice. But the sledge slid into the water beside Tommy and floated. He grabbed it. From out on the ice they saw the girl, held by the others, reach from the bank and grasp the rope, and then Tommy, soaking and freezing, crawled into the white snow and made it black. They watched as the whole group, sobbing and murmuring, climbed the bank for a few moments against the darkening sky and were gone. In the empty channel, the two figures stood motionless. Their eyes gazed unblinking through the swirl as the snow came again, hissing as it blew between the frozen reeds. Who is Emma by Kenneth Ireland? Good night, she called down the stairs. Good night, Emma, called her father. She could hear the television playing in the living room. She closed her bedroom door, got into bed, and pulled the cord hanging over her head to turn out the light. The room was in darkness. It took several minutes before she realized that something was wrong. First, she could hear the sound of quiet breathing, and at once lay still, listening, trying to make out where it was coming from. It was unlikely to be inside the room, she thought. There was no way any stranger could have gotten to the house without everyone knowing about it, and since the house was detached, she wasn't hearing the breathing sound coming through the wall from the house next door, either. Then there was a definite movement, just a slight rustling as if something was touching the bedclothes. At once, Emma thought of some kind of animal, and that was just as scaring. They had no pets, so if it was an animal, it must have entered through a half-open door sometime during the day and found its way upstairs, and it could be any sort of animal, if that's what it was. For the moment, the rustling was still on the far side of her bed. She eased the bedclothes free on her side, as quietly as she could, ready to be able to jump out quickly and run for the bedroom door, then half raised her head from the pillow to make sure. Suddenly she found herself accidentally touching something in bed with her. She sat upright at once and jumped out of bed, almost in the same movement, and now that her eyes were becoming more accustomed to the darkness, she could tell that whatever it was now upright as well. Before she had time to get the door open and run, the light came on. sitting up in her bed, still with her hand on the cord of the pull switch, was another girl, about the same age as herself. "Who are you?" this other girl asked. "Where did you come from?" Emma stared at her in surprise now, rather than fear. She was just an ordinary girl, wearing a pink nightie. More to the point, "How did you get here?" Emma demanded. "This is where I live. It's my house." Then she realized that it was not. Looking quickly round the room, she saw that the curtains had a flowered pattern on them when they should have been plain fawn color. The wardrobe was in the wrong place, and there was a mirror on it, while hers had no mirror. She glanced cautiously into the mirror and could see distinctly the reflection of this strange girl, whoever she was. So at least she had to be real. The carpet, now she noticed, was pink as well, while hers had been brown. The girl was climbing out of bed equally cautiously, remaining on the far side of it. Emma glanced at the clock to find the time. That had vanished, though it instead was a clock radio on a table alongside the bed, not on the dressing table where she had kept her alarm clock. It was all wrong. "This doesn't make sense," was all she could find to say. "I just don't know what's happened." She had gone to bed normally, with everything in its usual comfortable place, and now it had all changed. She didn't think she had even been asleep, but perhaps she had been. The display on the clock radio was reading half an hour later than when she had first got into bed. Then it came to her. This had to be her own house. The size and shape of the bedroom were the same, for one thing, and outside was the landing at the top of the stairs, and next on her left would be her parents' bedroom, and on her right the door to the small bedroom, which was used only for storage. She moved at once to open the bedroom door, then she felt round the edge of the wall outside for where she knew the light switch to be, found it once, and switched it on. It was the same landing, only the wallpaper was different, and the stair carpet had somehow changed color. At least, the woodwork was still painted white. Then a face appeared at the foot of the stairs as she stood looking down. "Why is the light on? Is something wrong, Hannah?" asked a man whom she didn't recognize. Then after a brief pause, "Who are you?" The other girl, looking across, was now standing at her side. "I don't know who she is," said the other girl, who was obviously named Hannah. "I just found her up here and in my bed." The girl's father came up the stairs in a hurry. "Who are you, and how did you get into the house?" he demanded. "I don't know," said Emma. She felt stupid now. Of course she knew who she was. It was just that she couldn't explain in any way what was going on. "My name's Emma. It's just..." Hannah's father looked at her. "All right, I'll make it simple. When did you come into the house, and where have you been hiding?" he asked heavily. Emma didn't answer, because there was no sensible answer. She wished that she could just go back into her bedroom, close the door behind her, get into bed, and expect it all to come out right again. It could only be some kind of bad dream. So without saying a word, she did just that. She returned to her bedroom, closed the door behind her, leapt into bed, turned out the light, and pulled the bedclothes tightly around her chin. Then she closed her eyes. When she opened them again, it was because the light had been switched on again. Now Hannah and her father were standing at the side of the bed. Hannah's father pulled the bedclothes back. "Get out of here and get yourself dressed," he shouted. Reluctantly, she sat up. Nothing had changed. She was still in the strange room, exactly as it had been before she had returned to it. When she stepped out of the bed and looked round, there were no clothes in there which belonged to her at all. "Where are my clothes, then?" she asked, bewildered. A woman now entered the bedroom. Hannah's mother, she supposed. "What's going on? Who is this girl, Hannah?" The other girl, Hannah, shrugged. "I've never seen her in my life," she said. "A girl from school, is she?" "I've told you, I don't know her." This would have been ridiculous had it not been such a nightmare. Nightmare. That was the obvious answer. Emma pinched herself. "Wake up, wake up," she told herself aloud. She had been able to wake herself out of unpleasant dreams before, only this time it didn't seem to be working. "Now, what are you doing?" asked Hannah's father. "Trying to wake myself up," replied Emma desperately. "You're mad," said Hannah. I'm sending for the police, decided her father. She's probably run away from some children's home or something. Let's wait first, suggested Hannah's mother. Perhaps she will tell us in a minute. Emma was grateful for that, only it didn't solve anything. This was impossible. She couldn't have gone to bed as normal and woken up, if that was what she had done, to find herself in what was clearly the same house, yet not the same house. Unless, she thought, it was really a similar house to her own, and somehow she had been sleepwalking, and somehow walked into it without knowing what she was doing. But if that had happened, how had she managed to get inside the house in the first place, and in such a short space of time? She pinched herself again. It was no use. Hannah and her parents remained staring at her. "Where do you think you've put your clothes, then?" asked Hannah's mother, almost kindly now. Emma shook her head. "They're not here," she said. "Then where do you live?" asked Hannah's mother. "Perhaps we could arrange for you to be taken home, then sort everything out afterwards." 16 Ox Close Lane, replied Emma. At least she was sure of that. At least it was one fact she could keep hold of. "But this is 16 Ox Close Lane," said Hannah's mother gently. That was a nasty shock. She looked at herself carefully in the mirror in the wardrobe door. She looked exactly the same as she had done in the few minutes before she had gotten to bed, less than an hour ago. Then Hannah was reaching forward to touch her, and then grasped her wrist firmly. Emma drew away. "Just seeing if you were solid," explained Hannah. Emma knew what she meant. She was just trying to discover if she was real. At any other time, that wouldn't have made sense. But just now it did. Emma might have done the same herself in similar circumstances. "Don't be silly, Hannah," said the girl's mother. "Well, how else did she get here?" asked Hannah. "What did you say your name was?" she asked Emma. Emma told her. "I think first we'd all better go downstairs," said Hannah's father. "She can borrow my old dressing gown," said Hannah. They went down and into the living room. That too was almost as Emma knew it, except that only the walls of the room had not changed, and the gas fire in the fireplace. The room felt warm, so without thinking, Emma went to turn it down, then realized what she was doing. It was only a short time since she had left this room. While she was turning the control knob, she happened to notice the corner of the fire's wooden surround. The little scratch mark was still there, leading towards the back of the fire. "How did this get scratched?" she asked suddenly. Hannah's mother looked at her father. "Why, it's always been there," she said. "No, it hasn't," said Emma in triumph. "I once lost a hair grip partway down the back of the fire and tried to dig it out with a screwdriver, only it slipped and made that scratch." Hannah's parents were now watching her uneasily, and Hannah with much greater interest. "And how do you explain that little story you're now making up?" asked Hannah's father. "I'm not explaining it. I'm just telling you that's how the scratch got there." Then suddenly she thought of something else. "There used to be a swing in the garden." "Well, there isn't one now," said Hannah. "No, there isn't," Emma agreed. "When we moved here, the frame of the swing was so old and rickety that my father pulled it down. Only it broke away and he had to leave the metal bar which held it in the ground because he couldn't get it out. I bet that's still there." Hannah's father went out of the room and returned with a large electric torch. "You just come into the garden and show me," he instructed. "It's too cold for her out there," protested Hannah's mother. "No, it isn't. Show me," said Hannah's father again. "Come on, you show me exactly where you claim that metal bar is." He led her into the back garden, although he had no need to. Emma knew exactly where that was, and where the garden shed stood. Hannah and her mother followed them. "We'll need a spade," said Emma. Hannah's father brought one out of the shed. She led them to the end of the path which ran beside the lawn. "There," she said, and pointed. Hannah's father began to dig, while Emma held his torch. First, though, she shone the beam at the house. It was the same house. She was certain of that now. Then she turned it back so that he could see where he was digging. A rusty metal bar came to light, brown and crumbling. It looked like the base of a garden swing. Hannah's father stopped digging. "Who are you?" he asked nervously. "I know who I am," Emma said firmly now. Without a word, Hannah's father returned a spade to the garden shed, and they went back indoors. Emma was feeling calm now that she was absolutely sure that she was in the right house, but she knew she wouldn't be able to stay there. Not forever. Sooner or later, somebody would want to take her away. And once out of the house, she might never be allowed to return. She mustn't let that happen. Not yet. Hannah herself came to the rescue. She might as well stay for the night, she said. After all, she's dressed for bed and she's got no other clothes. So it's the only thing that makes sense. She can share my bed just for the night. That was true, too, because Hannah had a double bed to herself, just as Emma had, or used to have, Emma thought to herself grimly. Hannah's father was biting the end of his thumbnail, still nervously. I don't know, he said weakly. What's the alternative? Asked Hannah's mother. We can sort everything out properly in the morning. It's too late to do anything else about it now. So go on, to bed, both of you. The girls went upstairs. Hannah said nothing until the light was out. She was obviously very worried about something, not surprisingly. If you really mean you live here, she said cautiously, what does that make us? Emma didn't know. She didn't even know what it made herself. I think I've seen you somewhere before, said Hannah, but I can't remember where. I think it was a long time ago. A sudden thought struck Emma. How long have you been living here? She asked. Just about 5 years. The house caught fire when the previous owners lived here then. Caught fire? Was anyone killed? I don't think so. Emma knew that Hannah was staring at her in the darkness. The same thought had occurred to both of them. What if Emma had died in the fire, but somehow hadn't known? I can't be a ghost, said Emma, but she didn't laugh. It was too frightening for that now. Then, when they'd had the house put right, Hannah was saying, that's when they decided to move somewhere else. I don't know why, and that's when my father bought it. So where had she been for 5 years? Emma was thinking to herself. It still made no sense. After a long time, they fell asleep. When she woke, she could smell something burning. She switched on the light. The room was exactly as it should be. Even her clock was in its right place on the dressing table. She screwed up one eye and looked at it. 4 o'clock. Hannah had vanished. Everything was now back to normal, except for the smell of smoke. Sleepily, she climbed out of bed and opened her bedroom door. Out there was normal, too, apart from the smoke coming up the stairs in thick swirls. It just had to have been a nightmare she'd been having, but another nightmare was about to start, a real one this time. She ran into her parents' room and shook both of them. Fire! She yelled. Then, as soon as they were fully awake, dashed back into her own room and dressed hurriedly. That was the first essential, she decided, rightly or wrongly. Her father had made his way downstairs through the thick swirls of rising smoke, and she heard him on the telephone. Then they, with the help of neighbors, all tried throwing buckets of water into the blazing living room, but without success. They were outside the house and in safety by the time the fire engines arrived. They stood in the small front yard, surrounded by what they had managed to salvage of their personal possessions until the last fireman had left. When the neighbors returned to their own homes, a police car took them to stay at her grandmother's 5 miles away. For what was left of the night and the following morning, they returned to survey the damage. The house was a mess, except, surprisingly, most of the living room, which somehow was virtually untouched, apart from the smell of smoke which hung in the air. If you hadn't woken us when you did, we'd all have been suffocated, said Emma's father. Or burned alive, added her mother. So what are we going to do now? Emma asked. It'll all be put right by the insurance, her father assured her. In the meantime, we'll have to stay at your grandmother's. But it'll never be the same, wailed Emma's mother. Not after this, all our furniture and my best things gone. It won't be the same anymore. I don't want to stay here. Let's find ourselves another house and move out as soon as we can. So that was what happened. As soon as the damage had been repaired and the house redecorated throughout, the house was put up for sale. It was not long before the first people arrived to look it over and decide if it suited them. It was Saturday, so Emma answered the ring on the doorbell. A man, a woman, and a small girl stood there. Good afternoon, said the man. Are your parents at home? We'd like to look around. Emma started. She recognized them at once. It was Hannah's father and mother. Between them stood a small girl. It was Hannah, without a doubt, but looking about 5 years younger than when Emma had last seen her.